I wanted to talk to you today about Minsk and Belarus Free Theatre's sort of work in general. And I thought a good place to start, given that this is the second incarnation of Minsk, isn't it?
Yeah.
From Edinburgh, mm-hmm. would be where Minsk came from in the first place, where the idea to talk about sexuality within that context came from.
It came from New York. Actually, it was from the very beginning of our theater existence, we've been trying to discover all possible topics that become like taboo zones that mm-hmm. nobody could talk about it at public. We get it together with many young people and started to write down all possible issues that not possible to discuss, and it appeared that we had 21 topics, started from sexuality and coming to political kidnappings and murders, and all those topics they were what is most horrifying. They were at the same level of prohibition, we decided that one by one, with every new performance, we will start to try to shake our country and our people in order for them to start to react at and be proactive and not reactive in with regards to their life. So it was like from the very beginning, if we talk about like about the nature of the company. We had a discussion with Vladimir Sherbin, and he was talking about real physical theater, like even physiology, that was interesting, and very basics of human being. And he brought the text of Kathy Eicher in New York in 1979. And for Minsk, it was absolutely like a bomb explosion, artistic bomb explosion. Because after this production, it was directed by Vladimir, but Nikolai, who is co-artistic director of the company together with me, we've been producers of that performance, and after that we were called porn producers, and it was organized by secret services in Belarus, and because we are as well known as Scientology cult that manipulates people's mentality, then we came to the point of porn producers. It was just a talk at the cafe with Vladimir, where he wanted to do the Kathy Eicher's text, New York in 1979, and it appeared at some point that people were shocked that something that happened in 1979 in New York never happened in Minsk 2010 at that 2009 at that particular moment. When we had the opening, he announced that we'll definitely talk about Minsk one day, but we didn't know when.
Mm.
And all our plans, they were destroyed when presidential elections took place, and 2,000 people got arrested, and one by one we were, in our case with Nikolai, we were smuggled out of the country, and with the regards to our actors, one by one, under different names, they've been leaving country. Then we've been traveling to New York, Chicago, Hong Kong, coming back to New York, and after that ended up in London.
So the actual making of the show happened outside of Belarus.
Yeah, that was...
But the idea came within
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I need to say that 90% of all ideas coming to us when we're traveling. It's very interesting connection. We produced all our productions in Belarus besides the recent one, Minsk 2011 and King Lear. And only when we travel, somehow our mind gets
open.
And some ideas are flying around, and then it's possible for us to shape and frame all of it. get back there and produce it. But started from the last year, we do it here. So the UK became a home for us in terms of, like, our home.
Mm.
Because at some point we just became homeless, having all of it where to live. And Belarus, but at some point when you're labeled as a state enemy, it's time for you, unfortunately, to choose whether to go and be in jail or to stay outside and to try to change something as a theater and as a person. So yeah, it was Dartington College of Art last July where we went for residency. Absolutely amazing place. And then it was Work in Progress that we presented at Edinburgh Festival, and we got French first, even corporate, because our co-producers from the fuel, they said, why you're not happy? You got the French first. And it was this kind of psychological state of the whole company, because we didn't know what will be going on, and knowing that many people were in jails among our fronts, not from the company, but the company members, they were interrogated, students was their education. So it was very complicated, even now, getting all these amazing reviews and understanding that the show is sold out. It's very complicated to be happy, because I know personally that the company is flying back to Belarus. Even having provocateur here during our performance, it's a big fear what would be happening to them when they're back. And knowing that one of our students, who is a part of Minsk 2011, he already lost his education at the state university when he came here to London to perform with us. So it's very, very complicated feeling. But I think from this feeling as well, there are next ideas that are appearing and helping us to stay together and to move forward.
It's really interesting to me that the show maintains its subtitle, which is the response to Kathy Acre, especially because I think the perception of her work here is perhaps a little different than kind of the US. And she's known as this sort of radical feminist who has very explicit language and uses sexuality in a very particular narrative and visual way. How much of that formal exploration that she does in her own text got translated or responded to in your own piece?
I think it should be connected to, again, to our past productions, because it was Mark Ravenhill, Explicit Polaroids, and 4.48 Psychosis by Sarah Kane. So it was always in the nature of the company. And it's interesting that Vladimir Sherbin directed Mark Ravenhill before we even started the company officially. And it was performed only once, because actors couldn't do it, and it was not possible to find any place. And with Psychosis, we checked up to 30 places where to perform. So it was not possible to express at this particular level. And I think it was just another side of the coin, because it's interesting, like, with Sarah Kane, it was her going very deeply into her life and her reflections on what's happening with her and around her. And with Kathy Acre, she was trying to reflect on the society using her personal sexuality. It's just absolutely amazing development. And it's just development, yeah. It's you're just expanding the issue, and I think that was absolutely amazing that Vladimir Sherbin found that text, and it gave the possibility to extend and expand. And then, of course, like what's happened to us British playwrights kind of taught us how to speak about ourselves. And after we had those first productions, we started to build up all our productions only on our personal experience. And the first production was Generation Jeans by Nikolai Halezin that was performed here at the Soho Theatre in 2008 and got 5 stars alongside with Bin Harald Pinter, another production of Vladimir. So it's very interesting how this writers give us a chance to think about ourselves and talk about ourselves. And that's why like 90% of our production are based only on our personal stories, our actors' personal stories, our friends and people who we know and who we meet personally. And for example, now we are flying to Asia and Africa to discover the issue of death penalty, and we will base the performance only on personal stories of people, but quoting Shakespeare, because he was the only playwright who mentioned all possible types of murders in the mankind history. So it's interesting that in at some point you use the text as a pretext in order to talk about ourselves. But I do believe we need to have another interview with Vladimir in order to have his thoughts on it as well.
I mean, do you feel because of that that there is a sense of the personal becoming very political, particularly in the context in which you're talking about? And perhaps that's where text, I think, in your work becomes very interesting. It's, to me, there's always this element of citizenry mm-hmm. and what does it mean to be a citizen, no matter what the subject of the show is. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is the brilliant idea that she wanted to write about New York.
Mm-hmm.
And with this particular text, it gave absolutely another flavor to her city. And at some point, it was absolutely a great idea that people just need to get to know about our city. And because if we need to explain that Belarus is in Europe and in between Russia and Poland, so it's very complicated to come to the point, what is Minsk?
Mm.
Because we've been getting some examples, even giving interviews in the UK when I was talking about Minsk, and I was asked by one journalist, so how is the situation in Ukraine? So it was kind of a surprise, because this is a country that is located right here. It's just 2 and 30 minutes flight from London, direct flight. And Tom Stoppard knows about that because he was there in that particular city 7 years ago. And but it appears to us that people don't know that place, and it's sometimes people even don't know the country, and it's 10 million people. And this is the size of Austria, Belgium, like 3 Baltic countries, like Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. They're smaller than Belarus, but everyone knows about these small countries. But when it's coming to Belarus, everyone tells us, but this is a small country, so that's why nobody knows about that. So, yeah. So it's kind of the idea, as you said, to bring this city to absolutely another level, and to say that there are people there, they have absolutely incredible lives, very complicated lives, but they're trying to enjoy it. And again, I was using previously word like to explode, so it would be artistic bomb explosion. Now I'm trying to say that it's like it's just the desire to shake, and shake not just people outside of Belarus, but people inside of Belarus, because at some point you feel that like everyone is falling to sleep, because when you're under dictatorship, you are just trying to preserve yourself, and you start internal migration. So you start to have internet, and then you forget that you are in Minsk because you are not in Minsk. Or when you are outside of Minsk, you feel that you are there because of internet. So, this particular desire just to say, listen, this country gave whoever you choose to talk about, it would be people from Belarus, and those people, those families who left Belarus, they made other countries famous. And the idea just to wake up everyone there in order for people to try to change their lives there. Outside, we want people to get to know that we exist there.
It sounds like you have a very challenging task to speak, particularly Minsk, about a subject that has no language in Belarus, and then translating that to a Western context where you have to do twice the job to kind of position it culturally, politically, spatially. It strikes me that the physical, the body is very important in the show because of that, as a sort of mediator between the two. Is that...
The major idea from the very beginning of the company was to get concentrated on actor and its story, and actually it's kind of coming back to the basics of the theater when only stories were told and only actors were on stage, because we work underground, the major and the whole concept of the theater, it's not even because we work underground, but because we wanted to show that body could mean much more than any high technologies using in the theater, light design, video design, it's much more expressive than any technologies in the theater, the power of one human being on stage, it's much more stronger than again, I'll get back to technologies. Yeah, it's exactly this idea that when we go and watch other performances of other companies in different parts of the world, we understand one thing: if there is no need for me to read subtitles, even that I don't understand what actor is saying, and I just stop reading the subtitles and just watching the actor, it means it's a great performance. And this is kind of the idea. We really don't want even speaking at our language, even having subtitles, but we don't want language to interfere into the whole idea of actor who has its own force. And I think another example to it, it's our performance at the Globe, during the Globe to Globe festival, when we performed King Lear. We've been doing that in Belarusian language, and there were no subtitles. It was just description of a scene. 2.5 hours raining and 7 curtain calls with continuous applause. So it's not about even the language. It's about actors and images that all of us in the world, in different parts of the world, could share.
Speaking of images, I know the sort of thing that's been tagged onto the show, which I think you said is, if scars are sexy, Minsk must be the sexiest city in the world. I mean, how does that kind of play work within the framework of the performance?
It's a quote of our actor Denis Tarasenko when he talks about his scars, and I think it's just absolutely brilliant, because it's just when you talk about violence, and sexual violence is very well developed in dictatorial countries, what could make the city the sexiest city? It's when this violence is used, and when people are beaten up all the time, and the whole idea of playing with these words and images, is absolutely a great artistic job that is done.
So the scores bring their own narratives with them.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. It's just the whole discourse of violence and how to become the most sexiest city. It's very, very deep and interesting, and it's not simple. There is no simple answer to it. Obviously, you don't want to be observed as the most sexiest when you are beaten up all the time, but
it has a currency.
But sometimes, at some point, nobody knows from where the scars appeared at your body. And nobody wants to hear that story, why it was done, why the person was stretched, stripped and electroshocked. And it's just very great to observe these scars, to say that you look handsome, but don't want to listen to the story that is staying behind. And this is what I think we want to try to bring as well, that there are stories behind these scars. And it's not just the visual image of the body. It's a lot of going on
behind.
Backstage.
You mentioned earlier that you wanted the Belarusian people to see the show and kind of awake from their internal migration. To what extent do you think, especially in the context of a dictatorship, theatre becomes immediately politicised because, you know, because it's trying to surface or make visible certain issues without necessarily critiquing them, just putting them on stage? I mean, to what extent do you think it's a site for, for kind of transformation or acting citizenship in a sort of maybe Bakhtian way?
You know, in 2007, when we started a global artistic campaign, Free Belarus, there were three people who supported that campaign. It was Tom Stoppard, Václav Havel, and these two greatest men presented us to Mick Jagger. And three of them made video appeals to people of Belarus who just filmed it. We put it on the internet, and then 2 weeks after that, we've been arrested together with all our spectators. And it was such a clear message from this great people. And one of the messages was from Mick Jagger, who said that I would come to Belarus and play my concert after dictatorship is over. And so it was not a message from any politicians. It was a message from two playwrights and one musician. But it was such a clear message that authorities understood that it's not playing geopolitical games with European politicians. It's absolutely direct message that dictatorship could be over very soon, and then we'll have a lot of great concerts and parties. Because it happened in Czechoslovakia after Velvet Revolution. And we started to get phone calls of people saying, after watching that, we're ready to go to jails and continue our fight if they would come here and it would be a concert of Rolling Stones in Belarus when dictatorship is over. So it's one of the story, part of the story. Another. It was 1 week before one of the big protest rallies in Belarus, in Minsk. And we've been in Amsterdam, and we got a phone call from one of our spectators who helps to distribute information and get people, because usually it's word of mouth or blogs. But sometimes we stop even to use blogs because KGB is reading that as well. So we use volunteers who bring people to our performances. And he said, listen, we have a big street rally. We know for sure like people will be arrested there. Are you coming to perform this week? And I said, what kind of connection? And he said, because we know that we will be arrested and we need to recall something in the jail when we are arrested and we want to recall your performances. And we said, yes, we are coming. So we've been performing like 2 performances per day. And it was not about politics and political encouragement at all. It was a love story. But again, like love story that was interrupted by the politics. And I think like this is exactly why it's like you feel that we just cannot stop. Again, it's the third story and absolutely amazing story as well. Last year, when it was necessary for us to make a decision, like for Nikolai and Vladimir to stay here, all of you are under interrogation. So if there is a chance, let's better stay together. And they said, no, you are campaigning for release of political prisoners. We are just actors. So if there is a chance for you to get people out of jail with support of other human rights organizations and politicians, continue to do that. We go back and perform when you are trying to release people out of jails, knowing that they will be interrogated, knowing that there is a chance that they might be not allowed out of the country, knowing that they could be drafted forcefully to the army. It's one of the ways of repression in Belarus. They understand that they need to go and perform. It's really, now I'm even talking to you, it's really goosebumps. And it's just this is the whole idea. What could be done just by people if they feel that they could do something, and if they feel there is a need to perform, they will do it.
Thank you.